to the Hacking Your Health podcast with Ben Canning and Dave Kennedy. Two guys heading out to hack body, mind, business, and beyond. We are here to provide a single source, bullshit-free guide to understanding your body and how you can live better for longer.
It's Dave Kennedy or Hacking Dave from the Hacking Your Health podcast. Just want to say, if you enjoy what we're doing here, what you're listening to, please share us. We're all over Instagram, Discord, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. Check us out at https://wehack.health, as well as our Discord server, which is discord.gg/wehackhealth. Pretty much everything is wehackhealth. But, you know, thanks again for all the support, all of the stories that you're sharing. Share your successes, your struggles. That's what this community is here is for. That's why we do this podcast, and your energy supports us. So thank you so much, and hope you enjoy the podcast.
Yo, what's up, everybody? Welcome back. I'm Ben Canning.
I'm Dave Kennedy.
I'm Meg West.
And this is Hacking Your Health Podcast. Meg, thank you for joining us. I know this is probably something that I probably put out to you quite some time ago, and it's taken us a while to sort of get it in the diary. So thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. I'm stoked to be here.
No problem at all. So essentially what we want, well, I guess what I want, and maybe Dave, you have some sort of input on this, just from, I guess, social media and things like that, I've seen your own journey and sort of what you've been able to achieve when it comes to, you know, health and fitness and things like that. And I think it would be interesting to get your perspective on things and sort of, I guess, how you went through things, what your biggest roadblocks were, how you overcame them, and sort of any advice that we could share with the audience. So from my knowledge, and obviously, please do correct me if I'm wrong, you've lost over 90 pounds. Is that correct?
It's amazing.
Yeah, that's true. I've lost, roughly around 90, sometimes more than 90. You guys know how weight fluctuates, but in about the last 2 years, yeah.
That's amazing.
Okay, awesome. That is amazing, yeah. And the other thing that I did notice from a little bit of Twitter search there, you do train in Vans, so you've got the green light for me. You've got the tick for me. But I guess back to the start of your journey, and you know, from my experience as a coach and people that I work with.
When you say Vans, you're talking about the shoes, right? You know, not actually training inside of a van. Okay, just making sure.
No, he's definitely referencing the shoes.
Okay,
just making sure. Or some days it's training in Chucks, so that's pretty popular
nice.
Too, I think.
Yeah.
I'm glad you used the word Chucks. By the way, my daughter is really into Converse. Lately, and I'm like, honey, you got to stop calling them Converses. You got to call them Chucks. He's like, Dad, no one uses the word Chucks anymore. I'm like, oh, okay.
If you're cool, you do. Come on,
now. Right? I'm the same. I feel the same way.
Yeah. So generally, I find that, you know, in my experience working with clients and stuff like that, for a change as great as that, there is always, I guess, a catalyst or something that makes you want to change. So I think if we start there, go from there. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. So for a little bit of background, I lived in Spain for a few years, just outside of Barcelona. I was moved over there for work. And, you know, I had a lot of colleagues that were native to Spain. So they grew up going skiing every year. That was the typical for them. They just go to Andorra, which is a little principality north of Spain, and they would go skiing or snowboarding. Me, the girl from Florida, I'd never touched skis or snowboard in my life, barely ever seen snow. But they said, you know what, Meg, let's go. Let's hit the slopes. We'll teach you. It's like, okay, great. Sounds fun. So we end up going skiing and we're in the mountains. And let's keep in mind that Florida has absolutely no hills, right? It's incredibly flat. And we're just walking up to the slopes. And all I can remember is feeling so awful. I could barely keep up with anyone. Just walking to the slopes, like getting to the lift, right? This isn't even skiing. And they weren't having any struggles at all. And that's where it really hit me. I was like, gosh, dang, you know, some of my closest friends, this is nothing for them physically. And yet for me, I'm so physically taxed and we haven't even gotten to the athletic portion of this yet, right? We're literally just walking to the athletic portion. And I remember thinking to myself, I was like, this is not how I want to live my life. So from there on out, this was during the peak time of COVID, I just really started focusing on my fitness. And well, also, to be honest, my mental health, I'm a big believer in taking care of the insides reflects well and translates over to how well the outside is taken care of. So I just really started focusing on my mental health. And that honestly is what kind of provoked the entire fitness journey.
It's interesting you say that too. From time and time again, a lot of folks, myself included, who have struggled with weight. Have you struggled with weight kind of your whole life, or was it, you know, a certain period of time that this occurred, or, you know, as you got older or young, you know, was this from when you were young? When did the weight, you know, start to kind of be an issue within mm-hmm. yourself?
Yeah, so I was always a little bit on the heavier side, but I think where it really became an issue is when I was in a toxic relationship. I was with that person while I was in Spain, and this was, again, during the peak of COVID. So it was really, food was what I would turn to for coping, for stress, yeah. for stress management. It was like my outlet. I didn't have a creative or, you know, a stress outlet or anything. So I would literally just turn to binge eating pretty much all day long and sitting in front of the couch. And so it was really, I want to say like 2019, 2020, where shit just hit the ceiling, for lack of better words. And I must have gained probably like 40 pounds in 1 year, just because I was utilizing food as like something to assuage my emotions.
And it's interesting. You know, I think, you know, you mentioned the story around kind of having a realization that, you know, physically that you weren't where you wanted to be at, mentally you weren't where you wanted to be at. And you took charge of that to really change your life. And it's really cool to being able to see the transformation, and you continue obviously to do that. And you know, I think a lot of folks, you know, obviously different scenarios and situations, but I think a lot of the things that you see with a lot of the folks in InfoSec and security in general, IT related type of stuff, is that we do live, you know, relatively, you know, sedentary lifestyles where we're not moving around. We're, you know, kind of using stress and things that we deal with day in and day out, but also in our personal lives as well. So if our personal lives, if our mental health isn't good, it impacts every aspect of it. So that mind-body connection is such an important piece. And the fact that you're able to recognize that and say, listen, you know, it's time for me to make a change and then execute on it and have a lot of success there is amazing. You know, it doesn't happen to a lot of people. And the fact that you're able to go from, you know, a point to where you know, were obviously in a bad relationship, bad mental state, to flip that and to really recognize that and then push forward is an awesome story. So, you know, tell me a little bit about what into that of kind of that realization, and then what you started to do to kind of get into, you know, one, I guess a good mental state, you know, coming off from that relationship, hopefully, as well as, you know, being able to really address the physical aspects of things, which both, you know, go hand in hand.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, going back to what you said about folks who work in IT or, you know, even specifically cybersecurity, I feel like there's such a stereotype in cybersecurity that says if you're not spending all of your free time consistently yes. putting your efforts into bolstering your technical acumen, then you're 100%. Not a good cybersecurity professional, or you're falling
behind the eight ball. You hit me right in the heart, because that's what I used to believe, you know?
Yeah, and that was my mindset for a few years. You know, I was at the time, you know, very young 20s. I just turned 27, so this is a few years ago, but I was the only female on my entire, you know, Fortune 100 cybersecurity team. I felt like I had a lot to prove, and I felt like if I wasn't spending all my time in front of the computer, then it was time that was wasted. So honestly, what yep. went into my overall transformation personally was ensuring to separate my personal identity from my work identity, and mm-hmm. realizing that the work I did at work needed to stay at work, and that I didn't need to use all my free and personal time to learn more cybersecurity stuff. It wasn't good for me. It wasn't good for my company. It wasn't good for anyone overall. I just was getting so burnt out on cybersecurity. So instead of spending those extra hours doing Try Hack Me or Hack the Box, or, you know, just like nerding out and researching, I started going to the gym. And when I was in Spain during the peak of COVID, I didn't have access to a gym. So I just go for walks instead, or just, you know, when you're that overweight, because I was, you know, really overweight, it's kind of difficult to discern what is the best first step. And I was doing this all by myself. I didn't at the time have any professional training or anything. I didn't have, you know, a trainer or nutritionist.
It's incredible.
So I was just kind of researching and taking it as I could. But the one thing that I knew that was imperative to the success was remaining consistent. That's the one thing that everyone said is, you know, it doesn't matter if you go intense every single day. It just matters that you show up for yourself every single day, right? So, you know, even if it was only 20 minutes of getting outside and walking, it was 20 minutes more of walking consistently than sitting on the couch eating potato chips, right? So at the very beginning, I was just trying to figure out, you know, how can I be active? I did end up getting out of the relationship, which I would say to anyone who's struggling with weight, before you just take to the gym and analyzing your diet, one thing, like I was saying, is to look inside yourself and really identify, like, why am I using these coping mechanisms of food or binge eating or not exercising? You know, what's the deeper seated issue that's going on here? Because for me personally, I tried for so many times over so many years to lose weight, and I was never consistently successful for it because I was never addressing the real reason of why I was being unhealthy, right? So really kind of, I honestly hired a therapist and, you know, went to therapy consistently for multiple months, and that really helped, you know, my mental health. But after I kind of addressed the real root cause of why I was incapable of losing weight and not changing my habits and lifestyle, I hired a personal trainer and a nutritionist. And that's honestly where I saw some of the biggest changes. I fell in love with moving my body. It wasn't just, oh, I need to go to the gym, this sucks, I don't want to have to go, you know, kind of dreading the physical activity. But I got excited about it and I fell in love with it. And I think that was the biggest change.
I think that, you know, being so attached to the why is so important. And whatever anybody's why is, it's always something that I try and at least have a conversation about at the start, because a lot of times, probably, and you can remember with this, like, people try to do things for the wrong reasons, whether it's to please someone else or whatever it might be. So being fully attached to the why and understanding the why will definitely keep you a lot more focused or on track with everything that you're trying to do. With the change in sort of mindset, or maybe change in identity is probably a better one. And I see this quite a lot. Like, at the start, it's like, I have to do this thing for this reason. But then whenever you sort of, I am a person that goes to the gym and you actually enjoy the physical change, like, how long did that sort of take, or what was the sort of change in that, or how long did it take?
I would say probably the first 6 months of going to the gym, I felt uncomfortable because my mindset of going to the gym was, I'm here to lose weight. And when I made the shift from I'm going to the gym to lose weight to I'm going to the gym because I want to get stronger, or I want to make new friends who have a similar fitness-centric mindset, or I'm going to the gym because this makes me feel great about myself, it gives me endorphins, I have more energy, that's when I really started seeing the change, when it shifted from it being a chore or a punishment to something that I was excited to do. Because, you know, when I first started specifically weightlifting, I was just discouraged. I was like, dang, I can only do, you know, 3 sets of 12 reps with 5-pound weights. I'm like, I have no strength, right? And then you start seeing everything increase, and suddenly, you know, you're doing 3 sets of 12 reps with 20-pound weights. And you're like, gosh, dang, I made that change in 6 months. You know, you quadrupled the amount that you're lifting. So you just get excited by it, I think. But yeah, that took me about 6 months. And honestly, I think one of the keys about that is, A, like we said, your mindset of why you're moving your body, but B, also having a community of people around you who can support you and who enjoy doing the same thing as you.
There's so much to unpack in this that I have so many questions, and also kudos in this. You're talking exactly, you know, it's interesting when you hear people's success stories on how they've been able to do it. And you mentioned something before about, you know, you failed so many times, we're not able to be successful with the weight loss journey, and then finally something just clicked and you're able to do it. And the why, you had mentioned the why. And I think, you know, reflection of why are we in this state, you know, in the first place, is it because we have too much emphasis on work? Is it because we're not in a good mental state based on a relationship? Is it because we're prioritizing certain things in our lives because that's what we assume we have to do to get to a certain position or level or place in life that we want to get? And I think that the realization that I had too, you know, similar to yours, was, you know, I didn't have to work till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning coding things, and then waking up at 6 o'clock and coding things, and, you know, spending, you know, 20 hours a day just, you know, writing out code and releasing tools and putting my name out there and speaking at conferences. And, you know, you can still do all of that, but you could do it within moderation. And I think we lose sight of that a lot of times because our careers take precedence over our lives. And you see this time and time again, not just with fitness and weight loss or nutrition or living that type of lifestyle. You also see it with family as well, where, you know, families aren't doing well because of reprioritization around work first, family second, and vice versa. And, you know, the truth of the matter is that we only live this life once. And if we're able to kind of prioritize our lives, knowing that, you know, work is just a component of that, and we can still get all of our work done from 9 to 5 and still have an amazing life that, you know, is a healthy lifestyle and everything else, I think is really important. But the why I think is what we miss. And we always preach, you know, the four pillars, you know, Ben's four pillars of getting to where you want to be. And the first, very first pillar of it is mindset. You know, if you don't have a good mindset in place around the why, then you're not going to be successful with the nutrition, with the fitness, with everything else that goes into that. So, you know, you hit on a really important topic, because I think most folks that struggle with consistency, which is another term you mentioned, I wrote, you know, I've been writing notes as you're talking these through. Consistency is something that you have to have willpower for, and you have to have the motivation for, and you have to have the prioritization of life for. And that comes down to the why are you doing this? And I think, you know, back a question towards you is, when you realize the why, you know, how long did it take you to get into a consistent way? And you mentioned no personal trainer, nutrition, just getting out there and moving, but being consistent with it. How long did it take for you to get into kind of a consistent routine? And then from there, when did you start to enjoy it and then really make it part of your lifestyle?
That's a great question. I think when I finally garnered access to the appropriate resources is when I really became disciplined and consistent with it. You know, a lot of people, they'll say, specifically my friends, perhaps family members or acquaintances, they'll come to me and say, you know, Meg, I really want to lose weight or get in shape and become active, but I don't have the motivation for it. And I'm sure everyone's heard this before, but just to reiterate, because I think it's just so honest and poignant, motivation is only 20% of it, right? That's what gets you off the couch the first few times. But you're not always going to want to get off the couch when you're tired after you've been working until 7 or 8 at night. It's the discipline is the 80% of it, right? And I think when I started enjoying it, even the days when I didn't want to do it, you know, like I was saying, you're working until 2 or 3 in the morning. I work in incident response. It can be a very demanding career. You don't want to go to the gym. You don't want to go lift weights for an hour and then spend 30 minutes on the treadmill. It's just not something that I have the energy to do sometimes. But if you make it into a muscle memory kind of thing and just becomes so integral to your routine and to your everyday existence, it's literally just like being on autopilot. I don't even think about it anymore. I just get out of bed. I walk my dog. The next thing I know, I'm going to the gym. And that's just, it's become a part of my identity. You see the same people every day. If you go to the same gym, generally people, you're going to say hi to each other. And it's honestly just the discipline now. There's not even motivation behind it. I know it makes me feel good. I know it makes me more confident, both physically and mentally. So I'm going to do it, you know?
Yeah, the good feeling I feel comes after a certain period of time once you start to do that consistency aspect. And we talk about this all the time on the discipline. We just did a podcast this week, and I woke up Monday, and you know, I do HIIT training on Mondays and Wednesdays, and I do resistance training on the others. And Monday, I woke up in the morning. I'm like, I don't want to go to Orange Theory. I don't feel like I want to go. But I'm like, hey, I don't really have a choice, brain. You know, we're going to go. We're going to knock it out, and we're going to see how it goes. And end up being one of the best HIIT sessions that I've ever done before. You know, I was a tear on the floor. I was running like crazy. I was doing everything I needed to do. And, you know, it's just getting over the hump that our brains continuously fight us with, to know that this is for the best of us, and having the discipline to go there and making time for yourself, I think is a challenge that a lot of people have. Now, you know, you're obviously a very busy person. You know, first of all, I'd love to hear about the story about traveling the world there. It was amazing seeing all the different locations and places you went to. But, you know, from a you know, discipline perspective, you know, how did you find going to the gym all the time, and how did it, you know, like when, I'm trying to figure out, like, when was the click for you to stay with it? Was it a month? Was it 2 months? Was it 6 months to where you had that kind of discipline in place to not just say, I'm not going to go and do it, but really became kind of part of your life and what you focused on?
It was probably 6 months in. I think when you first start going to the gym, at least for me, as much as people say to you, no one's looking at you or no one cares if you look silly, I don't know if it's a guy thing. I've never talked to guys about it, but I know from a woman perspective and from talking to my other female friends, I usually wear leggings and a sports bra to the gym. And when I first started going, I was like, dang, when I sit down or if I'm going to do RDLs, like, my stomach fat is totally going over my leggings. And then you start thinking, like, who else is noticing that? And perhaps you get a bit uncomfortable, right? So you start thinking, who's looking at me? Or, you know, I'm so overweight. Do I belong here? Or I don't know how to use this equipment. Do I look dumb doing this? There were a lot of mental blocks that were going through my mind that made me feel like I didn't belong in the gym. So once you start, like I said, you know, building up that community and learning how to utilize the machines at the gym and kind of getting into a set routine, knowing what splits you're going to do. That's when I really started feeling like I belong. But that was, you know, it took a good amount of time. It took me like 6 months of going to the gym 4 or 5 days a week consistently before I started feeling like I fit in and really had that routine in place.
I think that like, even, you know, to the mental capacity that would take to continue to do something that you potentially didn't fully feel comfortable in is a credit to you and that experience. And something, again, that you touched on, and like Dave, I'm thinking there's a lot of things that we talk back and forward about, and it's good to sort of have it reinforced by somebody else who's been through the journey, that, you know, the things that we talk about quite a lot do work in other circumstances. And the one thing that you mentioned there was about obviously the community side of things and the gym and the environment and stuff like that, and the importance of sort of changing your environment if you want to sort of change your identity and everything that comes along with it. Was there any, aside from the, you know, the sort of not feeling like you fitted in the gym, was there any other sort of roadblocks that you felt in terms of like finding a gym or finding a space that you felt comfortable in? Or was there specifics about the gym that you did find that did help with that?
No, honestly, I'm a big fan and believer that, well, first off, and I don't want to sound like a hard ass, but my reality and my idea for my own self is I just like I don't know if people can see Ben right now, but his hat says just do it. And that's kind of, you know, my motto is always just do it or do it scared, right? If something terrifies me, I'm going to do it anyway, do it scared. And it's just like, I didn't want to do it. And when I first moved back to the United States from living in Spain, when I finally got access to a gym, I was living in the middle of nowhere in North Carolina on a farm with my parents. The nearest gym was 20 minutes away. I still managed to get out of bed at 7 a.m, drive 20 minutes each way during the winter, snowing, ice, rain, whatever, because I had the purpose, drive, and discipline to do it. It was a little rinky-dink gym in the middle of nowhere. You know, it didn't have the latest, greatest machines. It wasn't, you know, full of all the fancy things to do. There wasn't a lot of folks there who had a lot of experience. They were just there because they wanted to work on themselves and improve, you know, their bodies and whatnot. And so here I am, you know, 2 years later, and I go to one of the best gyms in North Carolina. But I still treat it the same way. You know, they may have the fancy equipments, they have the sauna room, you know, the steam room, all the fancy classes you can go to. And it's like, you just still have to show up regardless. Even though it was intimidating in the beginning, going to that little rinky dink gym, I still had that purpose that I wanted to change myself, my life, my mentality, my mindset and everything. So I just made myself do it, even though it sucked to do it in the beginning.
I think the gym intimidation side of it is both on men and women, because I always had this fear as well of going to the gym and, you know, I'm not fit. And I see a lot of people that are, you know, more muscular or more, you know, athletic than I am. And, you know, why am I here? You know, that type of stuff. And I think what you have to realize is that everybody is in different parts of their journey. And you obviously have realized that different parts of their journey on their health and fitness, and that everybody's there for the same goal and reason, which is kind of bettering themselves, living longer, living healthier. And you had mentioned the mind-body connection. You know, when I work out, I notice that my mental acuity, how I feel in general, positivity, all of those things are an aspect of my life that continues to grow when I'm living this type of lifestyle. And I can honestly say, like, since I started doing this, you know, religiously, you know, my ability to do things much more efficiently, be able to be there for my kids, to be more motivated to do things in life and not, you know, sitting on the couch. You know, there's always, I think there's this meme that says, you know, it says something like, you know, I'm sitting here watching TV on the couch, and then it has somebody lifting in the gym, and it's like, you know, F that, you know, I got to go, I got stuff I got to get done today. So it's having that mentality there of getting things done, but also, you know, it took me a long time to get over, the mentality of the gym and going in there and drawing attention to myself. As Ben knows, Ben had a camera crew one time in a really bodybuilding gym, and I was terrified.
In case you don't know the story, Meg, the situation was the night before you were on the news the night before. So we were in this big building. I was like, I felt uncomfortable in that situation. So you were on the news the night before. And then we go into the gym the next day, and like, I see a completely different Dave where he's like, just like, you know, feels like people are watching. Now, granted, we did have two guys with cameras that were following us, so I do sort of get it. But it was just a complete day and night in terms of like, that was your environment you felt comfortable in. That was my environment that I felt comfortable in. It was great to see the difference the next time around whenever we went with the camera with Ryan there, and you felt much comfortable for sure.
Yeah. So one of the things on that is the comfortability in the gym. And just everybody listening, if you have a fear of the gym, just know that, I mean, 99.9% of the people in the gym are there doing the exact same thing you're doing. And maybe they've been doing it for 5, 10 years, their whole life. It doesn't make a difference. But, you know, I've met some of the nicest people I can possibly imagine in the gym. The biggest, most bulkiest guys or the women doing, 400-pound deadlifts are usually the nicest people you can ever possibly imagine and will help you whenever you have questions or don't know how a specific piece of equipment works. They're actually excited to go and actually help you out. So, you know, everybody's there to kind of better one another. How's your experience has been on that as well, as far as like general gym etiquette and people and just getting your stuff done, going to big gyms, small gyms, et cetera? I mean, obviously you get familiar if you keep going regularly, but you know, what's it been like for you, being a woman and going to the gym and that type of experience?
Oh man, I completely agree. I've definitely met some of the nicest folks at the gym. And, you know, the one thing that I'll say to anyone who's intimidated by the gym is when I started going 2 years ago, I mean, I was, 90 pounds heavier than I was now. I was not looking like I could accomplish anything in the gym. I didn't know how to use any of the equipment. I was out of breath 2 minutes in on the treadmill. Like, it was not a great situation. And here I am 2 years later. I'm, one of those women who's doing the heavy deadlifts, who's doing all the lifting, et cetera. And I feel super confident while I'm doing it, So the transformation, if you really commit yourself to it and are consistent with it, 2 years can change your entire life. Like when I look back at myself 2 years ago, the lack of confidence I had, the lack of self-esteem I had, how I didn't feel like I fit in or belonged anywhere, how I dreaded going to the gym to where I'm at now. 2 years, man, that's just like nothing to be happy and to be confident in myself. It's completely changed my life just by going to the gym. So yeah, don't let the intimidation keep you from achieving something that could be wonderful for you.
It's the same for me. I mean, really for me, it started changing 3 years ago when I really started going down this journey. And, to look back at where I was at 3 years ago to today, the confidence that I have, not just, aesthetically, which is a nice, bonus to that, but the confidence you have in yourself because you've been consistent, you've done the right things, you continue to do the right things. It doesn't mean that you don't have days where you go and hit a whole bunch of ice cream, or in my case, a whole box of Wheat Thins, we still got to live life, but at the end of the day, we've had more successes than we've had losses. And I think there's something to be said about that in our brains where, if we're being successful with ourselves, it equates to success in our lives in almost every aspect. And that uplifts us, gives us more positivity and confidence. Tell us how your confidence is kind of built over the past 2 years and kind of how you feel, not just in the gym, but just in general, and how it's kind of impacted your life.
Well, I want to answer that question, but there's one thing that I wanted to bounce off of you on what you said is that, one of the biggest turning points for me in my fitness journey was my old habit when I would try to lose weight or try to get into fitness was that I would, eat half a gallon of ice cream. And I'd be like, shit, I ruined it all. And then I would just stop. Whatever progress I've made, I'd say, oh, I just ruined it. Oh man, I slipped up. I ate McDonald's. Now it's ruined. And I'd get back into my old ways. I think a true hallmark of evolution or mindset growth in your health journey is when you realize that you, like you said, you don't go to the gym 5 days a week and work your ass off so that you can just eat grilled chicken and roasted veggies every single day.
That's right. That's right.
It's honestly a true hallmark of growth when you realize that you can eat McDonald's, you can eat the ice cream, etc. And how I knew that I was growing in my journey was that the next day, I wasn't afraid. I didn't beat myself up over it. I wasn't anxious about it. I didn't say, oh man, this journey's over. I ruined it all. I said, you know what? I had a great time. I went out with friends, had a few beers, and I know I'm going to hit the gym tomorrow. And that one day or 2 days out of the week or whatever isn't going to ruin anything, because consistency of 80-20 healthy eating to not so healthy eating and hitting it in the gym 5 days a week, it's still consistent, right? So I think that was like my true, I've really achieved something here moment where I realized that getting off track didn't mean I was, throwing all the progress away.
I'll tell you, Ben smirking right there because he has seen my lack of confidence in myself and that exact conversation when I always go back to the story about going over a buddy's house for poker and having some beers. And, I was extremely meticulous with my calorie counting to the fact that, it was like obsessive to her, 6 months of, doing 100% what I possibly could, not having lapses. And then I remember, one day, you know, I went over to my buddy's house and I had, you know, some pizza and I had some chips and I had some, you know, beers, and I went over my calories by like 800 calories. Right. And the next morning I wake up, I'm like, I have just completely screwed 6 months of work. You know, like I'm totally, you know, a mess. I'm a disaster. I'm the kid that I was, you know, 6 months ago, the guy I was 6 months ago. And, you know, what was great is having, you know, I had a support system, luckily, with Ben there. Ben's like, dude, stop saying that. It's just one day. He's like, who cares? Like, just go do the gym today and you're good to go. Like, let's just get back onto it. You know, don't let this become your new habit. And I think you hit on the point that a lot of people really struggle with. And this is what I'm really frustrated with, you know, learning the fitness industry, is that the crash diets, the extreme circumstances and situations that people put themselves through because they read a fitness magazine or article or, you know, something they research on Google without having a good foundation or framework around there, those things aren't sustainable. And so when you slip up once, you get that feeling, or, you know, you feel like you can't sustain, you know, drinking, Leafs for 7 weeks straight, or smoothies, you know, or shots of whatever, you know, that you're a failure because that's not something you can sustain for the rest of your life. And, you know, you had mentioned a couple of things there that I think are so important around the consistency of getting out and moving, regardless of what that is. You know, I think people feel like, you know, they have to go to the gym 7 days a week, you know, for 2 hours a day, and, you know, they don't have the time for that. Or if they do, they just burn themselves out so quick. You know, it's not this sprint to get to those desired results. You know, it's taking you years to screw your body up. So it's going to take years for you to unscrew to get to a place where you want to go. But the fact that you're out there moving and burning calories and, you know, being conscious of what you're doing, but still being able to enjoy life and food. I mean, just the other day, you know, I had my buddy Bobby in from the Marines. We were deployed together in Iraq, and, you know, I took him out to a nice steakhouse. I had some crème brûlée afterwards, and you know what? I felt fine. I felt great. The next morning, hit the gym, and I had some amazing carbs for me to be able to destroy the gym the next day. So, you know, it was a great, you know, win situation there. So, you know, it's that consistency of getting back on it and not giving up, but also not starving yourself. Because I think what most people do when they think they have to diet is, you know, let's just say, you know, their basal metabolic rate or total daily energy expenditure is 2000 calories. Like, well, I have to eat 500 calories a day. And, you know, your body shuts down, you feel like crap, you know, you just don't want to do it, and your body doesn't want to do it. And then having energy to go out and actually move around is even worse. So I think, you know, you had mentioned one thing I meant when we first started this conversation is that you said you had no personal trainer, no nutritionist, but you took charge and you researched, you know, what you had to do to be able to do that. And so that's, I think, that framework that you put yourself in, that's like, hey, I'm going to have good days, I'm going to have bad days. Hopefully I have more days that I win than not. And being able to get back on that and being able to focus on it but still enjoy life is a really critical part to people's success long term with all of this versus, you know, 4 months or 6 months of having success, and all of a sudden now you gain 40 pounds back, 50 pounds back, and then you're back to the same routine. You're in a bad mental spot. You know, do you agree with that? And kind of, you know, does that kind of sound how you went through this whole process as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And to be completely honest, since I didn't have a nutritionist or trainer up until a few months ago, I was self-researched and I was solely focusing on protein intake, and that was not good. I didn't even know what a macro was 6 months ago. And then I hired, you know, the personal trainer and the nutritionist, and I learned that I was severely under eating. So, I mean, right now I'm like 130 pounds. I'm about 5'3" on a good day. So I'm not the biggest human. I was eating about 1200 calories a day, still packing in 130 grams of protein. But 1200 calories was just not enough for the amount that I work out, for like my lifestyle. And my, you know, nutritionist and trainer, they're like, Meg, you are severely under eating, and that's why you're not seeing, you know, the physique, the muscle, the strength gains that you're wanting to get in the gym. And so, you know, they put me on a macro tracking plan, and suddenly I went from eating 1200 calories a day. Now I eat 1900 calories a day. So, you know, almost nearly doubling what I was eating. And at first that was really hard for me. There was a huge mental block there. I was like, I don't know if I want to eat more, because I was terrified of gaining weight. But then I realized I don't have a goal weight. I have a goal body physique. And the way to attain that isn't through quasi-starvation and seeing how little I can eat. It's through strength training in the gym, eating the appropriate nutritional foods, which includes, you know, carbs and fats too, not just protein. And that's when I really started seeing the changes. That's when I started seeing the muscle mass going up. You could see some definition, my arms, my legs. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it, you know. But there is definitely a huge roadblock for me. Suddenly I just started having to eat so much more food. And I was just terrified of it because society says, you know, oh, if you're this amount of weight, then, oh, you know, that's not good, or that's overweight or something. So it took me a bit to get there.
Yeah,
and actually, according to my BMI, I'm obese, so.
Same, actually. No, actually, whenever I had a look earlier on, I did see that you eat 1,900 calories. I also saw that you're a fan of the Fairlife shakes as well. And anybody who's listening, there's a deeper meaning of the Fairlife shakes. Yeah, delicious. A shortage, because Dave has them all. It's something that, so the majority of my coaching career, I train females. Yeah, that's the problem right there. the majority of my coaching career, I train females, and I dealt with this quite a lot in terms of like their entire life, or everything that they've sort of been built around or thought around, with either like they can't eat carbs because they're quote unquote bad, or they have to eat, you know, 1100, 1200 calories or whatever it is. So I've seen that so many times, and not just with females, like even whenever I started increasing Dave's calories, he's like, are you sure about this? He's like, I don't know if I picked the right guy. So I want to sort of elaborate now, because I know there will be people, and I know I go through it time and time again, but sort of how did you overcome the sort of mental hurdles around eating more food and sort of seeing things change in terms of, like, I assume, and obviously correct me if I'm wrong, there was a period that the scale started to go up while your body sort of found a new status.
Yeah, it was really hard for me. It was like you said, you know, with Dave trusting you, I had to put a lot of trust into my trainer and nutritionist, and I was terrified. You know, I've worked so hard, sweated so much, put so many hours into getting that weight down. I was like, shit, even when it's, you know, 5 pounds on my frame, I was terrified. I was like, oh, you know, my leggings feel a little bit tighter. Who's going to notice this in the gym, trying to figure out where it is? But most of the time it's, you know, it's not even fat, it's water weight or sheer volume from eating food or something like that. Right. So honestly, once I just put the trust into the trainer and let it happen and stayed consistent with my workout regime that I was provided, and, you know, I'm sure with your clients, you probably have them take photos too, but I found that's the best way, is that through taking those progress photos every week and taking the measurements and everything, though the weight, sure, that might have gone up a few pounds, I lost an inch on my bicep, or, you know, I lost a couple inches around my stomach. Or you can see from your weekly progress photos that your muscles are growing, that you've, you know, lost some fat, that kind of thing. You look thinner in your waist. So, you know, even though maybe the scale is going to go up a little bit, overall, the body physique that I'm trying to attain, I'm getting closer to it because I'm doing the appropriate things and properly fueling my body.
Yeah, absolutely nailed it. It's the having more data points than just the scale is key, I think.
Right.
Well, and it's funny, and it's also scary. So you had mentioned the calorie aspect of things, right? And when I first started with Ben, you know, I didn't know Ben personally, you know, And luckily I lucked out with Ben, because Ben actually cares about the people that he's working with and their success and knows exactly what he's doing. It's funny because I'll share a podcast with Ben that has like a scientist on that's talking about like, hey, there's this specific thing here and this is what you do. I'm like, Ben, you were doing that 2 years ago. And like the science is like backing that out now. I'm like, that's awesome. You know, he's like, kind of like, I know what I'm talking about. Right. I'm like, yeah, I guess. But the funny part, you know, the calorie aspect took me a long time to really trust Ben, because, you know, Ben's like, hey, we're going to start pushing calories. I'm like, hey, you know, like, I feel like I'm going to get big again, like Big Dave again. And it was really hard for me to take a look at the scale and push myself to certain levels, because all I can remember at that weight was Big Dave, right? You know, the overweight Dave, the unhealthy Dave, the Dave that, you know, sat on the couch all day long. And, it, you know, it took me a long time to have enough confidence in myself and trust in Ben to really be able to push calories to build muscle and also do cutting phases and have the discipline to be able to, you know, cut the fat off. And, you know, when, you know, you'll see a lot of times, it's funny because whenever he gets a new person coming into get into the program, you know, the person's like, hey, you know, Ben's increasing my calories from what I currently eat, and I really want to lose weight. I'm like, trust him. It's the calorie black magic that he has, and it will absolutely work out. But, you know, that's also an area of concern, because, you know, I was at a pretty deteriorated state, you know, when I kind of hit my rock bottom around my weight loss. And, you know, I kind of only had one shot left in me, I feel like, to get to a point to where I would have been successful in my health journey because I'd failed so many other times. And my fear for people is in the same type of position that I was in, not good mentally, not good physically. You know, yes, I was able to run successful business and things like that. But, you know, as you'd mentioned, if you're, you know, if you're physically not there, you're not mentally there, and mentally not there, and not physically there, there's a very good connection. So I was not, you know, being good with my kids and being interactive with them. I was traveling all the time. I was away from my family. My priorities were all out of whack. And, you know, if I would have found a bad trainer and I would have failed at that, I mean, that could have been absolutely catastrophic for me, my health, and who I was in the future. So, you know, for people that are going out and doing this, I'd heavily recommend, you know, researching who you're going to go with, because it could literally be the make or break of things. If you get somebody that doesn't know what they're doing and they're like, hey, we're going to cut your calories down 1,000 calories, and you just feel like total shit all the time, you're going to think that's a normal thing, and you're just going to be starving yourself. You're not going to make any progress. You're going to continue to sit there and focus on the scale. You know, there's a lot more to our bodies than just the scale. And I think, you know, hitting on that is important. What happened with you before you, how long did it take you for one, to trust your trainer, and two, you know, would you recommend what to look for in other trainers as well?
It took me probably 3 months to trust my trainer. I feel like
that took me a lot longer. It took me a lot longer for Ben, by the way, to throw that out there.
Still some trust issues going on.
There's some trust issues.
No, I think, yeah, you're always going to have trust issues putting your health in the hands of someone else, regardless of their credentials. That's just the nature of it, right? You know, it's, you're always going to be conscious. You're always going to want to be fact checking them or understanding why they're making the decision they're making, because it's literally talking about your livelihood and your body and your happiness and your mental health, right? So, you know, I think that's very normal. That said, yeah, it took me like 3 months. And I think because, excuse me, I think it took me 3 months because that's generally the amount of time that it really started to take to see any results. That's how long it took me to really start getting into a routine with the regimen that she'd provided. And that's how long it really took me to get any feedback from, you know, the program that I was following. After the 3 months, that's when I really started noticing some of the bigger changes. So I think that's why it took 3 months. But other than that, I think I got a little bit lost on the question. Sorry.
For me, like, it's funny that you mentioned those things about, you know, you're essentially putting your trust, your health, the quality of your life in the hands of someone else. And that's something that I've always sort of had at the forefront of my mind in my coaching. Like, I never took that for granted. It's not just a case of whether it was on the gym floor or whether it's in an online capacity. It's not just a case of you just taking that person through a session and that's where it ends. Like, there's so much more that goes into it than just the session, the way the program is, and the food side of things. Like, there's a lot, the relationship, and I'm sure you can see it between me and Dave, like, the relationship that you build with your clients is far beyond just what they give from a, you know, a macro breakdown or a session or something like that. So I'm glad you hit on that, because I think other trainers, and I've seen it time and time again when I work on the gym floor, like, they just don't give a shit about the person. And I think that that is why there is such a, people are so hesitant to actually reach out and get a trainer in the first place.
Yep. What, Meg, quick question for you on comparisons with men versus women. So, you know, based on our differences in our body, women typically have a lower metabolic rate than men, which means, you know, less calories basically, that women typically have to consume, which means that women typically have a much larger problem losing weight. So what are some of the challenges, you know, being a woman coming through this and being successful in this, it would be different than a man for in many examples, like, you know, would you say, you know, the food side, the nutrition piece, the mindset piece, what kind of differences would you say there are? Granted, our bodies still work the same way as far as calories in versus calories out, macronutrients, but, you know, what were some of the challenges that you think you could help other women that are struggling with weight, you know, specifically on, you know, through this journey and to be successful with?
I don't think that there's really huge differences. You know, I'm not really sure from the food and exercise side, but I think from the societal side, it's different. I don't know why, but I think there's just so much more pressure placed on women societally to look a certain way. 90% of the ads that you see that are targeting women are going to be, you know, like the most beautiful toned woman that you've ever seen in the entire world. And I think that makes it really hard for women who are trying to get into a healthy space, because you see these unrealistic expectations of what you should be aiming to look like. that are completely unrealistic. You know, the majority of people genetically aren't capable of having abs. That's just the reality of it. So I think just the unrealistic expectations that are placed on women from so many different standpoints, that's what makes it really tough.
Yeah, it's funny. I struggle with the same thing, I struggle with the same thing during this journey too. Around, you know, like I came from, you know, over 300 pounds, so it's 320 pounds, and so I still carry a lot of excess skin from when I was, you know, that big. So for me to get, you know, a six pack of abs, I probably need to have, you know, corrective surgery done, you know, to get that going. And that's not something obviously I'm going to do. But you know, if I really cared about it and I was focused on it, and that was all I was going, it's unrealistic expectations. Even if I dropped to, you know, 2% body fat and was almost dying, you know, I probably wouldn't be able to see, you know, the full defined abs that you see from a genetic perspective of a lot of these bodybuilders out there. So I think setting realistic expectations for yourself is consistent, you know, between both men and women. But also, you know, I think one of the points that you hit on that is really important is the tracking of your progress, and just having progress in general keeps you motivated to push on. If you aren't seeing progress, that could be really demotivating. Was there any times where you just like felt like, I just want to quit, this isn't working?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, everyone hits that stagnant point where you're doing the same everything. You're working so hard, you're sweating your ass off, you're eating everything within your macros that you should be, but the scale just doesn't change, right? And that's like Ben was saying, you have to have more data points that support that you are making progress and you are changing. Are you sleeping better? How's your digestion? You know, how is your strength? Are you able to lift more? Are you doing progressive overloading and, you know, progressively getting stronger? There's so many different things that you can pay attention to that say, hey, you are making progress, as opposed to looking at your weight. Because when your weight does get stagnant and you're still trying to lose weight or something, you're in a cut, you have to turn to the other data points and say, you know what, I still am making that progress. But that's really hard. That was probably one of the most difficult things for me, is like, why am I going to keep working my ass off if my weight's not going to drop, right? If I'm not seeing any changes. But then you go and reflect on your progress photos and like your biometrics data and everything. And you're like, oh yeah, it is changing. I just can't use the scale as my only data point.
Has the social aspects of things helped out too? Like having a support system of friends, you know, compliments, people that you can rely on when you're having down days. Has that been an inspirational thing for you? Or do you really just rely on yourself and the data to go for it?
I really just rely on myself and the data, because, and I don't mean to sound like a Debbie Downer, but people really come and go in life. That's what I've really... Sure. I've learned as a result of getting farther into adulthood. I'd say, honestly, I'm probably the most athletic person out of my entire friend group. I do, you know, obviously believe in surrounding myself with like-minded people who, you know, also believe in having an active lifestyle. But sometimes you just can't find people who are into the same things as you, and they fulfill other needs, whether they're creative or they support you mentally and emotionally. So yeah, absolutely. My friends, though, they'll be like, oh, you look great in that dress. Or I notice that you look stronger, or, you know, I can see that your biceps are looking really good. And that always makes you feel nice. But also, I'm single, I'm dating, I'm on the market. So it's always nice when a guy's like, oh, you know, you definitely look like you work out. Or I've had guys be like, oh, I can tell that you go to the gym. That's the biggest compliment.
Yeah, validation there, I think, is important as well. Yeah, no question. I'm a bit of a social bee on that side, which I prefer. Having more of like folks that can uplift you, that help out, like especially when you have down days. And that's been very helpful for me personally. It's amazing that you've been able to do that, you know, without that, and kind of keep yourself motivated based on the data, the trends, and, you know, obviously receiving from feedback from others. But, you know, for me, there was many days where I was just like, I don't feel like I'm making any progress. I don't feel like I'm moving forward. And, you know, you're like, and Ben will be like, hey, here's a picture of this week, and here's a picture when you first started. Let's talk about, there's no difference there, really quick. And I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, good point. But I also think it's important to have that data to be able to be successful with it, right? Because as you'd mentioned, there are times where my just scale is not moving, but I'm seeing, you know, an increase in biceps and an increase in quads and a decrease in waist. So something's happening there to where, you know, I'm building muscle mass and I'm able to at least keep that and you know, start to shed some of the body fat, and you start to see more defined abs or things like that. So there are other ways of tracking progress than the scale. And I think, you know, what we're taught is you have to be a certain, you know, fit in a certain model of this is your height and this is your weight. No, it doesn't need to be that way at all. Screw all of that. Focus on what makes you happy and the progress that you're making. And again, progressive overload, getting stronger as you're going along. Did I weigh, you know, lift 5 more pounds than I did last week from a volume perspective? Or, you know, what are small wins that I can keep in myself to keep me motivated in this. And I think that's so key to this lifestyle and success, because if you don't have any positivity towards it, why are we doing it in the first place? You know, aside from the health benefits and everything else, I think, you know, keeping ourselves motivated is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. You know, I think going back to what you said, I've moved around so much in the last few years. I think that's one of the biggest things that kind of makes me have to be self-motivated, is because most of my friends are living on another continent and another state. So they're generally not here to see the progress. However, one of the things that does really invigorate me and get me so stoked is I remember going back to Florida, where I, you know, was born, raised, lived most of my life after living in Spain for several years. And a lot of my, you know, health and fitness journey had been done in Spain. And I came back stateside and saw people I hadn't seen in a couple of years. I went into an office, actually, the company I used to work for. And I remember waving at one of my old colleagues, and he just like stared at me blankly. And I later walked up to him and I was like, "Hey, Kevin, how are you?" He's like, "Who are you?" He literally didn't recognize me. I'd lost 90 pounds. He had no idea who I was. And, you know, it was really funny. He's like, "Oh, have you been on the cocaine diet?" And I'm like, "No." I mean, that makes you feel good about yourself when someone literally doesn't recognize you.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing I just want to touch on quickly, obviously you said about moving around quite a lot, and obviously you spent some time sort of traveling around Europe recently. How did you manage everything while you were traveling? Because I get this a lot, like I travel, or, you know, I can't do it because of this X, Y, and Z reason. Like, how did you do that while you were on the go, or how did you manage everything?
Great question. And, you know, perhaps you're looking for an answer that says I got a gym pass because it was existing Europe where you can just, you know, go to like hundreds of different gyms in different countries. I did not do that. I did not have access to gyms. I did a lot of calisthenics. And I ended up tracking it. I walked 7 miles a day at least. And that was purely just from backpacking. It wasn't like me going out of my way. It was sightseeing, having fun. You know, Europe is a lot more hilly and mountainous than it is in America. So I generally got a lot of good workout in through doing that. That said, I did notice I lost some muscle while I was there. You know, 3 months of not doing any strength training, like dedicated, I definitely lost some muscle. I think I gained like 7 pounds in 3 months. And I was totally okay with that. You know, I was really concerned about it at first, and I'd go to my friends and I'd say, "Oh gosh, you know, I've gained 7 pounds. I'm terrified. Like, I'm never going to get this back off. All my hard work is gone." And they're like, "Meg, you are on a once in a lifetime kind of trip. I was literally just carrying my stuff around in a backpack for 3 months, had no plans, nothing booked. And it's like, you can't go to Italy and not eat pasta and drink wine. Like, it doesn't work like that." And so I'd say, I'd be like, "Guys, should I just not drink the wine? Should I like eat a salad instead of eating the pasta?" And my friends were like, "No, like, you don't work your ass off just to do this." And also, I had the confidence at that point to know that when I got back stateside that I just hit the ground running. And it literally, I think, took me like 2 weeks to get the 7 pounds off. It was mostly from drinking alcohol, to be honest.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's exactly. Funny,
like, Ben and I went to Belgium, and I was in a deficit at that time. And I was like, "Man, should I not enjoy the Belgian waffles?" And I'm like, "No, I'm going to enjoy the Belgian waffles." Like, you know, it's, we put in a lot of work to enjoy, you know, once in a lifetime experiences or good food or things like that. And, you know, again, that consistency and knowing that and having the confidence in yourself is literally the whole battle, right? I mean, you know, being able to say, "I'm going to do this because I know I can trust myself with it, you know, and I'm going to eat, you know, 2000 extra calories today. And then, you know what, tomorrow I'm going to hit the gym again, you know, and eventually I'll keep on that train again." So it's that consistency that is so important there. Sorry, but I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I wasn't expecting an answer. I think that exactly what you said was a perfect answer. It's, you did what you could while you were there. And also you didn't really worry too much about it, and you actually just enjoyed yourself. And that's the most important piece. You know, it's being able to go away and do what you can and enjoy food and enjoy, you know, time with friends and whatever else, but know that whenever you get back, that's whenever you sort of dial things back in again, and you know that your body will sort of respond because you have the confidence in the process and the things that you do. That's perfect.
Yeah. I mean, while traveling, if you want an easy way to try to keep some of the weight off or try to remain active, the simple thing is just to walk. people, when they go overseas, yes, they feel so inclined to pay, you know, exorbitant amounts to get a taxi or Uber or something instead of walking 2 miles each way, you know? So that's honestly one of the easiest ways to stay active for me, was just choosing to walk everywhere instead of taking, you know, a taxi.
It's interesting. You see culturally the impact of that too, right? You know, typically countries or societies or, you know, cities where people are walking around, most specifically throughout the day, typically have a much lower obesity rate. And so just getting out and moving and walking in steps, and just by, you know, let's just say doing 8,000 to 10,000 steps. So the magic number is always debated, but it seems to be 8,000 steps to have the longevity impacts of walking in steps. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't do 10,000 steps, or if you're feeling awesome and saucy doing 15,000 steps or whatever it ends up being. But, you know, just getting out there and moving your body, you're burning calories, your body's not producing, it has to, you know, repair things, it has to do things. That's how our bodies are designed to work. And, you know, steps are such an important piece. I mean, Ben always has a requirement of X amount of steps. And what's kind of interesting about how I've liked how Ben has adjusted certain things, like if I'm having a just a few weeks where I'm just plateauing and I'm just not losing any weight, right? Ben will be like, well, instead of dropping calories, which you're already pretty low, let's look at adding an additional, you know, 10,000 steps a week, or, you know, doing 20 minutes of cardio twice a week, you know, extra to burn an extra amount of calories to see if we can get you past this. Or maybe we're going to increase the calories for a couple of days just to get your body acclimated to that and then drop you back down again. And all those tricks, you know, with your bodies seem to work really well. But just the moving around and getting started moving around is such a big deal. And you don't have to go to the gym 10 days a week. You don't have to go to the gym 2 days a week. Just by walking, getting your steps in is such a huge benefit from you, from a longevity, health, body, mind, everything just comes along with that.
Agreed.
So I want to ask you a question because we only have 5 minutes left, but I decided to Google the term women and fat loss. Okay. And I just wanted to read some of the top areas there and then get your perspectives of it. And then what you would recommend for people starting off in this journey as well. And some of the first ones I get is, best fat burners for women of 2023. Okay. The burning supplements to buy, best diet pills, top 5 most effective weight loss supplements of 2023. How to lose the belly fat. And then the best supplements for weight loss, SI showcase, the best natural appetite suppressants for bills for weight loss. So this is what people search for when they're looking to do weight loss. Isn't that terrifying? Yeah. Isn't that absolutely terrifying?
Terrifying, because I have never done a single one of those. I've never consumed any kind. The only thing I've ever done is take supplements to help my digestion, and that's it. Because I was having some digestion issues and it was recommended by a doctor. But other than that, I've never put anything inside of my body that was advertised to do something like that. I think people make those Google searches because they know what they need to do. They know they need to consume less than they exert. They need to eat healthy. They know they need to move their body, but they don't want to do it. So they're looking for an alternative. They're looking for an excuse that's easier, you know, an easier way to accomplish something. And that, personally, I think that just means they're not ready for it. I don't think they're ready for the journey. What's that saying? You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. There's so much knowledge out there that's free. You know, you can just go on Reddit. They have a great weight loss subreddit that so many people are helpful and supportive on it. And, you know, there's just so much information out there that doesn't require paying money for it. So people, honestly, in my personal opinion, if you're just trying to pay the money for the quick fix, you're not looking at the long term. And once I really realized that it's literally a long term, everyday thing. It's not just a health loss journey. It's literally the rest of your life. It's something that you're going to be doing for, you know, for me, probably the next 70 years. That's when it really starts to click in. You know, it's not just a quick fix. It's something you have to do every day.
It's a hard one because, excuse me, again, it's a society, and I'm going to blame Jeff Bezos and Amazon. Everybody can get everything right away. But this, to me, is the one thing that you can't pay for, essentially. Like, you can't pay for your body to change in that way. And two, you can't do quickly. And for me, that's the best thing about it, is you have to actually earn it. But to tell someone that, okay, right, yeah, we can do this, but it's going to take 2 years, they're going to be like, I'm not really keen on that. The guy on the internet told me I could do it in 6 weeks. And it's again, comes back to the expectations things, I think.
Yeah. And it's, you know, look what's happening with like semaglutide right now and a lot of the fat loss medical procedures that you can do, right? It's really designed to shortcut, you know, things. And what people don't realize about things like semaglutide, for example, is that if you don't have good nutrition, yes, semaglutide will work for trying to be an appetite suppressant. But if you're already used to certain portion sizes, things like that, it's not like burning more calories. It's literally telling your body, hey, I'm not hungry. So people will typically lose weight on it. But as soon as you come off of it, you know, those receptors are right back fighting again, saying, I'm hungry. So, you know, you literally have to take a shot the rest of your life for something like that to be effective with. And most people aren't into those types of things. They'd rather take a pill or something else that goes along with it versus, you know, hey, at the end of the day, I have to be accountable for what I put in my body, understand what I'm putting in my body, and from there, put the work in to make my body, you know, stronger or adapt to my surroundings that I wanted to. And our bodies are such incredible machines. And it's interesting how we've screwed ourselves up with the food systems that we have today, because we have access to so much caloric dense foods that don't really fill us up from a, from a health perspective, you know, with good macronutrients and micronutrients. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, our body never considered that we would have access to unlimited food. So, you know, it has kind of flaws there, but at the end of the day, we can control our environment and what we do and where we want to go. We could be lean, we can be big, we can be strong, we can be, you know, really skinny, we can be really, you know, we have all these different options. We can just tailor ourselves to that. And I think that's the most impressive piece of it is once you realize this is a journey, this isn't a, you know, 6-week crash diet that all of a sudden is going to magically change all of your eating habits and you're going to come off of it losing, you know, 150 pounds and be shredded with a 6-pack. It doesn't work that way. You know, this is a journey that, you know, as you mentioned, Meg, I don't have 70 years left on me. I don't think, and maybe I do, maybe they're going to have some pill that's going to fix aging, but at the end of the day, we want to live longer, live a happier lifestyle and feel good about doing it. I'm 40 years old. It's the greatest I've ever felt in my entire life. You know, I want to keep that going.
Yeah, it's absolutely not easy. I can definitely say there's literally been blood, sweat, tears, vomit a few times that went into getting here. There are many times, and I'm sure this resonates with you, Dave, where I wanted to give up, where I thought, dang, this is just not worth it, or I didn't want to go to the gym, or I was exhausted, or you just want to give up. But man, the mental health that I have now, the physical health that I have now, the ability to go to Europe and literally just walk everywhere and carry 45 pounds of backpacking stuff with me, I never would have been able to do that 2 years ago. And it's so funny, I always tell my friends, when I was in Europe, I was trying to get from Switzerland to Italy, and I was taking a train. I was completely lost trying to get from one train to the other. And I stopped and asked a local. I said, you know, where is this train? It leaves in 5 minutes. I really need to be on it or else I'm going to be screwed. And she's just pointed in the direction and said, go that way, but you need to run because the train's about to leave. And I said, okay, great. Well, for context, you know, I'm backpacking. I have a big Patagonia backpack on the back of me with like 30 pounds. And then I have a North Face backpack on the front of me that's about 20 pounds. And so I'm literally running towards this train. The backpack on my back goes up while the one on the front of me goes down. And it's just like a seesaw of these backpacks flapping up and down while I'm trying to run. Well, in total, these backpacks weigh 45 pounds. So I had this realization. I was like, shit. I used to literally carry this weight inside of my body, but now yep. I'm just like choosing to carry it physically. Well, I was just like mind blown by that realization. I was like, I literally used to have all this weight inside of me. That story is kind of funny though, because I kind of just gave up. I can't do this. I was like, if I miss the train, it's okay. But it was just like so difficult for me to run with that 45 pounds extra of heavy luggage on me. That was just like, nope, I need to start doing this in the gym. I need to put extra weight on me and see if I can run, because it was impossible. But
that was think of the toll that had in your body. You know, think of the exactly, toll that 90 extra pounds had in your body, lugging that around all day long, cardiovascular wise and everything. You just don't even think about that. And you're just like, wow. You know, I we'll wrap things up, but I remember making the excuses when I was big of like, oh, I'm just big bone. I'm just designed to be this way. It's genetics. It's all of this. And I made all these excuses. And, you know, I start to look at myself like, oh, I'm not big. I'm not, you know, I'm just a big guy. You know, I'm not overweight, you know, at 320 pounds. I'm just a big guy. And, you know, I see a picture of me when I was 320 pounds. I'm like, holy shit. Like, who is that guy? Like, what the hell was I doing? You know, and, you know, it's a realization when you're 320 pounds, like I lift 320 pounds. I'm like, that's a lot of Dave, you know, that's a lot of Dave. You know, so I can definitely resonate with that. But, Meg, I really, really appreciate you coming on today and kind of sharing your experiences. Any last words of wisdom that you'd instill on folks of being successful in this journey? I mean, you hit on pretty much, I think, awesome stuff that we preach here all the time. But you know, it's so awesome. For one, the transformation that you've been able to do, stick with and be successful, but two, just being an inspiration to other people out there and sharing your journey. I think that's the most important piece here, is sharing our experiences and really getting out there so that other people can be successful with it. And I really appreciate you doing that as well. It's awesome to see it.
Yeah. Thank you so much, both Dave and Ben, for having me. It's been a lot of fun just, you know, just chatting about everything. And I think the one last thing to summarize it up is that it's worth it. Every moment where you think, man, I really don't want to do this, or why am I doing this, or is it worth it? I assure you, the future you, if you keep consistent, you will believe that all the work you put in was worth it.
Yeah,
it's a great way to end.
I absolutely agree. Like, it's a case of it will be hard, but it definitely will be worth it. And again, thank you for joining us, and thank you everybody for listening. As always, we'll be back again next week.
See y'all later. Thanks very much. Thanks, Meg. Bye.